Joining us for this lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ is located at 1303 Evangel Drive, Huntsville, Alabama, 35816. It can be reached by phone at 256-837-8730. Worship is held every Sunday morning at 9, with Bible study following at 10:15. Evening services begin at 5 on Sunday evenings. Wednesday Bible study is held Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock.
Certain man had two sons, Luke 15 at verse 11. I've heard that sermon 1,000 times, not this one. You've never heard this one. You know how it's based. Several years ago, I went up to a high school in Ukraine, a magnet school, we'd call it, the best English department in high school in that town of 2 million people I was working in. An English teacher was at the door waiting to greet me. I love English teachers in Ukraine because they speak English, and I do too, but they also speak Russian. Я немного говорю по-русски. Translated, I don't speak much in Russian. So I need English teachers. But this particular English teacher said, "Oh, Brother Andrews, when you were here last time, you told a story about a young man that ran away from home and had to feed hogs. Where did you get that story?" I reached down on a stack of books and picked up a Russian Bible and fumbled through it. Finally found Luke. She said, "You mean it's here?" I turned over to chapter 15, handed it to her. She said, "That's it. That's it. I want to read that to my children again." She said, "It's a beautiful story." And it is. Certain man had two sons. The younger of the sons said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me." And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son took all that he had and took a journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. I wish we had 1 million young people here tonight, because I want to ask, what is his problem? And the young people might say his problem is being 17 years of age or 18 years of age. That's not his problem. Joseph was 17 years of age at one time. Daniel was 17 years of age at one time. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was 17 years of age at one time. They didn't have the problem. What was his problem? His problem is found negatively in Matthew 6:33. "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." He didn't do that. That was his problem. He was looking for something besides that which satisfied. He was looking for wine, women, and song. Quite natural, you say, for a guy probably in his older teens. I don't know how old he was. Older teens, early 20s. "I just need to sow some wild oats." That's how he would have explained it. "And I can't do that in Daddy's house." But young people, and this is not just to you, but you need to hear it well, older people as well, sin takes you further than you want to go. It keeps you longer than you want to stay, and it costs you more than you want to pay. "Honor thy father and thy mother, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth." That's another problem he had. He didn't. We don't read of his mother, but we read of his father. And it's natural for a teenager, as he grows into his 20s, to want to be away from home. God intended that. You don't stay with mom and dad all your life. But you honor them all your life. And Daddy knew what was in the far country and probably had told the young lad many times, but the lad didn't heed his plea. Because you see, when you're 18 years of age, you're smarter than your daddy who's in his early 40s. I can guarantee you that. Except Mark Twain wasn't. Mark Twain was 14. He said, I thought my daddy was the most stupid guy on earth, and I was surprised by the time I got 25 how much that old man had learned in 11 years. Parents do learn kind of fast, don't they? Something happened to our country in 1925, and you say, yeah, we were getting ready for the Great Depression. Nobody knew it. That's not what I'm talking about. The economy doesn't bother me. Now, you might say, that's very strange. Are you rich? No, hardly. But the economy doesn't bother me. But what happened in 1925 at a place called Dayton, Tennessee, bothers me. The Stokes trial, it's called, some of us call it the monkey trial, and the monkey won. I can assure you that the Father in heaven cares what we do and cares how we grow and cares how we live. And Big Daddy in a tree doesn't. That's the difference in the two gods. And we lost in 1925. I'm thankful to God for those young people that are sitting here tonight that have decent grandparents and parents who said, your daddy is not the one in the tree. Your daddy is the one in heaven. And I want to scare every man in here to death, especially if you have young children that don't have children yet. Your children will determine who God is by the way they perceive you. That's almost heart attack news, isn't it? Well, what problems is this fellow going to encounter? This man that runs off to the far country. What problems will he encounter? We don't know what he's going to encounter, but we know some things he did encounter. All on his own. Can't say he's God forsaken, but he's not doing God's will, so God is not with him in the way that he needed God to be with him. So when he got to a far country and had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in the land. When do emergencies arise in your life? When you need them, when you're well equipped for them, when they're not emergencies. If they happen when you are well equipped for them. Emergencies arise when you least need them. And when the famine hit, the lad was out of money. Not only was he out of money, but he had spent his living. He had spent all he had. It was not that Dad gave him a couple of $1,000, so okay, go have fun. And when you're through having fun and blow this, come back, you still got $50,000 here that's growing and growing and growing. Don't worry about it. He spent all. He wasted his daddy's hard work. God was not with Jonah, as Jonah would like for him to have been. Jonah went down to Joppa, down to the beach, down into a ship, down into the sea, down into a great fish's belly, down into the depths of the sea, and there with the bars, the ribs of the great fish about him, he prayed diligently to God. And God lifted him up, turned him into vomit, put him out on the land, and he went running to Nineveh. He was a long way from Nineveh, I can assure you. 700-800 miles. But he went to Nineveh and did what God told him to. The prodigal son, see, was on the horns of a dilemma here. Anything he did appeared to him wrong. He could have starved to death, that was wrong. Or he could feed hogs, and that was wrong. Not just a dirty job, mind you, but a sinful job. He could not eat a hog. He could not touch a hog. He could have no fellowship with hogs. Could have nothing that came from a hog. And yet he joined himself to a citizen of the country. and went in to feed hogs. What does a young person do when he has only two choices and they're both wrong? He takes the lesser of the evils. He doesn't have that kind of life. There's never two choices with both wrong. There's a third choice. And we're just too afraid to opt for that one. This boy didn't have to feed hogs. There's no temptation taking us, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not suffer us to be tempted above that which we are able, but will, with the temptation, make a way of escape. That's a guarantee from the Father. It's not my guarantee. There was an escape. He couldn't find it. Sometimes you have to look very carefully. Sometimes you have to get down on your knees and look, but it's always there. God said, it's always there. But hog pens offer solutions. You ever thought of that? You can get into a hog pen. You don't have to act like you might have to act in church. Like my friend Gil. Gil was a faithful Christian. But everything was not nice in his home. His wife left him and established a business. End of comment. On her. His daddy died almost immediately. But then the real crusher was that his 16-year-old daughter just got her driver's license, went out to visit friends, and was coming home one night on the weekend late. And she ran through the grill of somebody's car and stared God in the face directly. Gil went to the bar. That was his best company. Nobody criticized him there. Nobody said anything about his wife except poor you. Nobody said anything about anything because they all felt too good. And Gil could cry and do what he wanted to. And then less than a year later, one of the women who worked at the bar said to him, I'm not having this kid. I'm putting her up for adoption. And Gil said, oh, no, don't do that. I'll take her. Isn't the bar fun? Isn't it wonderful where there's no criticism? Where all the people are trying to help you? I'm being a little facetious, sarcastic, because here's a woman in there that knew him, that said, I'm going to give this kid up or let a surgeon take her away, whatever the case may be. I don't have any business with her. I met that little red-headed girl when she was about 14. I couldn't believe it. I was in the community, and I said, I don't believe I know you. She said, Gil is my father. I thought, Gil's not your father. I know his three kids. They're a lot older than you. But Gil was her father. The bar has a gotcha at the end. You want to hear a story? No, you really don't. But now that I've asked you, you've got to hear it. About Gil and Jamie. College freshmen, Christians, junior college in their community, childhood sweethearts. They would get married at the end of 2 years and then go to university together. They were very happy. And then one night at church, the preacher preached a very strong sermon. And as they were going to get a Coke that night, they looked at each other and said, you know what, we might ought to back off a little bit. Because everything he said is what my mom and daddy taught me and your mom and daddy taught you. Well, backing off a little bit is mighty, mighty difficult. young people, once you get involved, it's hard to back off. But they backed off, and then their relationship kind of went like that. They spoke to each other casually on campus, tried to be friends. A few months later, Jamie, coming out of his physics class, cell phone rang. It was Jill. Her voice didn't sound right. Jill, what's wrong? Where are you? I'm over here at the clinic. Yeah, what's wrong? Are you sick? No, not at all. Jamie, you need to come get me because we need to go to my house and talk to Mother and Daddy. Gotcha. Satan said it was beautiful. And it is. But not now. Not between Jill and Jamie. Never was. And now, it's turned terrible. I could just hear David saying, who sent you that message? Who sent you over here to tell me about that? Bath who? Oh, I know who you're talking about. What's your problem? Yeah, it's not a problem. I'm king of Israel. No, I'm not afraid of her husband either. I know he's a great warrior, but he's under my command. As a matter of fact, that baby will be his. Or so the community will think. Go get him. Uriah wasn't about to stay with his wife that night when his men were dying in battle. And he told his commanding officer that. You know what David did? He got him drunk. And Uriah lay at his door all night. And the community knew that. David says, no problem, I'm king of Israel. I'll take her for my wife. That won't be any problem for the commander-in-chief to do. So he had Uriah executed. I won't explain that. You know the story. And moved Bathsheba right in. No problem. Everything is working out all right. I told you, Bathsheba, this would be all right. But you see, there was a man there named Nathan. And he sometimes stuck his nose in other people's business. And he came to see David, and he said, David, there's this rich man down here that has taken a poor man's lamb. Poor man had only one lamb. He's taken this lamb, and he slaughtered it and fed it to a guest that came by. And we don't know what to do about it. David said, such a man ought not to live. You ready? Gotcha. David, thou art that man. Have mercy for me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according to the multitude of thy tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from mine iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions and my sin is ever before thee. Is ever before me. Happy life. One of David's boys raped his girl. And that's only the beginning. Death. Terrible things coming his way. With God saying, David, I will spare you. I will let you live. You are a man after my heart, but you went away. And your people will be punished. That boy came to himself and he said, you know, I'm starving to death. I've got pigsty stuff in my hair and on my clothes. Even the servants in my father's house have bread and to spare. I perish with hunger. I will rise and go to my father. Say, Father, I've sinned against heaven in thy sight. No longer worthy to be called your son. Make me one of your hired servants. You know, Satan was not pleased. I'm sure he offered a concrete floor in the pigsty, hoses to wash down the old sows and boars, blue and pink bows to go on their backs, walls to hold in the air conditioning, carpet on portions of the floor. The prodigal son had to be saying, you can't make a castle out of a pigsty. You just can't do it. Yield got some mighty good help and counseling in a bar. Look where it took him. It won't work. It seems that it will. It looks like that's right. But when we compare it to the real thing, it doesn't compare. He arose and he went. Now the father is not going to know who he is because his hair is matted. His clothes are terrible. He might even walk with a limp. He's lost a lot of weight. The father can never pick him out. He's going to think he's a hobo coming down the lane. Any daddies in here that think that I'm being silly? I hope so. Because a daddy knows his boy. All those things might be true, but he knows his boy. And while he was yet a great way off, his father saw him. And he ran to him, fell on his neck, and he kissed him. The son started to deliver his speech, probably through tears. Father, I've sinned against heaven in thy sight. I'm no more worthy to be called thy son. Not to stop right there, boy. Stop right there. This make me one of thy hired servants never got out of his mouth. Father has servants with him. The best robe, the ring, the sandals, fatted calf. Bring all those things except kill the fatted calf. We're going to have a good time. We're going to give a thank offering to God. A family time together when things have been rectified, sins have been removed. And if you have a camera right now, get it, because I'll show you a picture of grace. This boy deserved to be kicked all the way back to the far country. He deserved to be rolled in the hog pen. He had created so many problems for his father and wasted everything. He deserved absolutely nothing. But take a picture of this. When the great robe is draped over his shoulders, it atoned for the hog stuff and the mud. And the father ordered it to be so. Is he over it? In modern times, somebody would say, isn't that Richard's boy up there at the Lord's table? Why, I'm not going to eat any of that bread and drink that juice today. Well, hey, he's been forgiven. He's given up. He's still got hog stuff on him. I'm not going to touch it. It's what his older brother did. And that would have been all right if the boy had still been in sin, but he wasn't. He was out of sin. He was away from it. He was free. But it was not normal. The Bible doesn't record critics except his older brother, but you know he had them. Because sin takes us farther than we want to go, keeps us longer than we want to stay, and costs us more than we want to pay. That's just the way it is. Blessed is the man that endures temptation, for when he has tried, he shall receive a crown of life, which the Lord has promised them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I'm tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. I could measure your age by asking you how many of you remember the line, the devil made me do it. Oh, that was funny. But it was not true. The devil tempted me to do it. He didn't make me do it. I opted to do that myself. The devil didn't send the prodigal son away. He went away on his own. The devil didn't put him in the hog pen. He got in the hog pen. The devil didn't put Gil in the bar. He walked into the bar. The devil didn't introduce him to the bartender. He met her on his own. That's just how it is. Nothing more, nothing less. I have a story I love to tell. And I preached here twice last summer, and I just might have told this story. I don't remember if I did or not, but if I did, endure it again because I love it. Man's daughter left home. She was big enough to go rent her an apartment and get her a job. And she became a city girl, and she loved it. And it was all right for her to do that. She was in her 20s. But she talked to her daddy almost every night. And then the contact slowed, and one Thursday night she called her daddy and said, Daddy, I want you to know, I haven't called you so much. I've made a lot of friends, and some of my friends have invited me to go to a cabin for the weekend, and I want you to know that I'm going. And I realize that you're a good man, and that you're a Bible teacher, and I appreciate all you've taught me, but it's just a little restrictive. And Daddy said, keep yourself pure. Knowing that she couldn't, because there were obviously three couples going, and she was half the third couple. And he added, call me when you return. Saturday was a long day. Sunday morning at worship, kind of hard to worship. Sunday afternoon, the phone rang about 4 o'clock. And he heard her voice and he said, you're back, you're back. That's wonderful that you're back. She said, no, I'm not back. You're still there? She said, no, Daddy, I never went. He said, what happened? She said, well, when I was 16, you gave me a Bible concordance. And I got to thinking after I talked to you that I might look at it. I knew how to use it. I just never used it. And I looked up a few words, and I found that God was about as convinced on things as you were. And even though I yet don't quite understand them, I said to myself, I think I'd better listen to my Creator. Thank God for parents who for a moment think they failed and learned they didn't. It hasn't been long ago since I preached a sermon on the prodigal son. A little country church way south of here. As I walked down the aisle on the very back seat, there was a young man sitting there, I'd say 26 years old. He rose from his seat and shook my hand and turned around and sat back down. And I thought, what's this? As we sang the closing song, I stood beside an elder, a man I had baptized some years ago. And after the prayer, I said, Bobby, who is the man that shook hands with me during the worship? He told me his name and said 6 months ago he got out of jail and we baptized him 2 weeks ago. And he's now a faithful Christian. Thank God. What about you? What about your life? Jesus said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." And if you want to come and say, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight, I'm no more worthy to be called thy son," stop right there. Because God does not have hired servants. Yes, he has slaves. I'm one of his slaves. All faithful Christians are one of his slaves. But we're slaves in great reward, even in daily life. God doesn't have hired servants. And when you try to hire yourself out to God, you do this and I'll do that, it doesn't work. Give yourself into his service. A man in New York City, many years ago, walking down the street, sign on his front saying, "I'm a fool for Christ." That would be funny in Huntsville. It was funnier in New York City. "I'm a fool for Christ." People pointed and made fun of him. But they noticed the sign was a sandwich sign. He had straps going across his shoulders. They had to look on the back. And on the back it said, "Whose fool are you?" I'd rather be a fool for Christ. I'd rather be a slave for Christ. Because I'm going to be somebody's slave, somebody's fool. You make the choice as we stand and sing.
We hope you've enjoyed this lesson from God's Word, brought to you by the West Huntsville Church of Christ. If you would like to continue your study of God's Word with a Bible correspondence course, please contact the church office at area code 256-837-8730.